Well, it was the World Mountain Bike Championships in Montsenan, Quebec on the weekend. And I'm joined today by a man who is no stranger to World Championships, Ollie Beckinsale.
How you doing?
Crikey, Ollie must have some memories of the World Championships, I'm sure. When was your first one?
First one, I was June in 92, so I was 16. So yeah, I think the first Worlds, I think it was 1990.
1990?
Yeah, was that... I did 92 was my first. I think I'd done, I had a little tot up. I think I'd done, I did 18. Worlds.
You've done 18 World Championships.
I think so, yeah. So quite a few. Yeah,
have you still got all the kits from all that?
I keep bits and bobs, yeah. I've never kept bikes. I keep jerseys and I keep number boards. That's the two things that I've kind of got. So I got bags of jerseys and bits and bobs. The old school one when they went, you know, old school British Cycling white. Then they went to a horrible green one year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some newer stuff. It was cool. Some really good times and good memories.
Actually, what do you think of the British kit this weekend?
Oh, I'm not a great fan of the new stuff. I'm a bit old school. I like the old school original white with the G, but yeah, like really old, early 90s.
But 18, so back in 1992 then, was there like a formal British team back then?
It was really relaxed. I mean, we were lucky and there was British Cycling was really relaxed and there was no real national team, there was no lottery money or anything like that. And then we had sponsorship that year was from 7-Up, the drink. They had a load of money because mountain biking was... like 99, early 90s, huge sport. So we had sponsorship from 7-Up for the national series. It was on Channel 4 on the Sunday morning on the telly, a mentor.
Yeah.
And then today had a national team. So there was six, it was in Bromont in Canada, so an expensive trip. Tim Flukes.
Yeah.
A lot of guys know Tim Flukes, worked for RockShox for many years.
A big technician.
He was the manager. And then we had six juniors.
Right.
And even though I was a youngster, I got the sixth spot.
Mm-hmm.
And went away on that one. It was cool.
Wow. And who were the elite guys from who was leading the the world?
So there was amazing amount of elite guys. A lot of them are crossed over from cyclocross road.
Yeah.
So you had David Baker,
right? Yeah.
Tim Gould. So you had the big rally team, big Peugeot team.
What about on world level? Who won that race?
I ran that race 92.
Come on, Ollie, going to push you on this.
Henrik Janice, I think it was. Danish guy, rode for Richie.
Yeah.
And then you had Frischknecht, Tinker Juarez, Tomac was still smashing it.
Yeah.
So, you know, year before 91, he won cross-country and second in downhill.
Going back to, you said about 7-Up sponsored the team. Did you notice that there was a lot of motor brands on some of the national team jerseys? I think I saw Suzuki, I saw KTM. There's a lot of sort of motor sponsorship in there.
I think it goes in waves, I think, depending on the popularity. And I think that back then, mountain biking had a big... It was a new extreme sport. It was mainstream. There wasn't a divide between downhill and cross-country. It was just mountain bike. And I think that helped in a way. So we had some big corporate sponsors, outdoor sponsors. Now, I think with the... Mountain biking, I think, is in a really healthy place at the moment coming round, and therefore, especially with the Red Bull influence as well and the television coverage, that then means corporate sponsors start to eye it up.
Mm.
You know, if it's getting TV coverage, those big boys start having a little look then, I think.
Yeah.
If it's just made low, it's bike brands, isn't it?
So it's the World Championships. It's a hugely important event. Now, I know that the downhillers throw everything. They throw the kitchen sink at this event.
Yeah.
It is massively important. Does everybody approach it differently? Do cross-country riders approach it differently as well as the downhillers?
Worlds is what it's all about.
Yeah.
The only difference between mountain bike and cross-country is they have the Olympic side. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, that's only comes around, that's a once every 4-year thing.
Yeah.
And I think actually people would put worlds above it.
Really? In cross country?
I think it's a cycling sense. Yeah, I think so. And it's the toughest race and it is the one race a year. And I always, for me, it was bigger than any other race that year.
Yeah.
And I got top 10 in cross country twice as a senior. And now I put those as my best results ahead of everything else.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was, and you throw the kitchen sink out. Equipment, prep.
Yeah,
everything. Big risks.
Yeah, and of course, lots of people did throw the kitchen sink at the race on the weekend. Unfortunately, Brooke McDonald had a huge crash in practice. He's had surgery on his back, so we wish Brooke all the best in hospital. But let's go into the cross country.
Some great racing.
Amazing. Now, the track. I'm not an expert on cross country racing, Ollie. I'll have to say, but the track looked actually quite full on. Some of those rock sections. That's like World Cup downhill standard, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think it's the toughest track.
And
it's
the toughest track?
I think so. I'll put it out there as being the toughest track.
Yeah.
There's some big rock gardens that have been built, but some of those sections are built, but what they've done is the last couple of years, to make it more technical, they've found sections that are natural in the woods. The big rock slab
Yeah.
That's only come in the last two or three years.
And they are big rock slabs. If they look big on TV...
They're proper. Yeah, and the thing is, Mont Saint Anne, over places, it always rains. You know, there's always humidity. It's always rained at some point during the week. Yeah. It can rain the morning of the race.
Yeah.
So it's rooty, it's rocky, and there's a lot of the sections that, even the linking sections, there's no smooth single track. There's always things that will catch you out.
Yeah. And like the technical climb, the switchback climb, that seemed to have rocks in it.
Yeah, I mean, all the way up, there's very few sections on there, and a couple of the corners, really steep, really loose. And when you get tired, you slip, then you've got to get off and walk. Mm-hmm. There's not many parts of that circuit where you're just flowing and kind of switching off.
I was surprised, actually, in the men's race, there was quite a lot of people getting off and pushing up some of this. I mean,
yeah,
why were they doing that?
Just fatigue.
Really?
Just getting it wrong, yeah, just knackered. And you're trying to get up a rocky technical climb when you're knackered. And that's when you just make mistakes, wrong gear, wrong line choice. And it's funny, you see the really tough tracks like that, it splits your top 10 guys and your guy in 50th.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of tracks, they're only split on time.
Right.
There you can visibly see he's really, really good and he's just good. Yeah.
And then there was like a downhill flowing section, and then there was a grass field. And I looked at that grass field and I thought, oh my God, I do not want to be pedalling up through that grass field because it's going to be really sticky, right?
Yeah.
After all the rain.
Yeah, the whole thing is just every part of that circuit, you're trying hard, you know, and it's you're sprinting in and out of corners. It's a really demanding, like physically. I mean, I used to find it tough. It didn't suit me as a bike racer. I've never had a good race around Mont Saint Anne in my life. Bloody hate the place, frankly. But yeah, I liked more physical, as in common. I was a climber, a bit old school. Stick me on a forest road uphill with a nice flowing single track and I'm happy boy.
Right.
So on that stuff, which is big physical stuff, throwing the bike around, technical ups and downs, it was too much for me as a racer.
Wow, crikey. Let's talk about the women's. Now, a French woman, Ferran Prevot, won the race, her first world title, right?
Yeah, and a big comeback. Yeah, so she's had some... She was a world champion multiple disciplines, you know, the biggest thing in cycling, and then had some... arterialist, you have to have some big operations, and then as this is a big comeback, and all year she's been getting closer and closer to the front.
Yeah,
and to fight back, you know, win the biggest race of the year is unbelievable.
And it did mean a lot to her, didn't it?
Yeah,
but quite a comeback by Yolande Neff during the race. She was in third place at one point, and she reeled in McConnell pretty efficiently towards the end of the race, didn't she? And it was on that technical climb, right?
Yeah,
I mean, McConnell did seem to be struggling.
Yeah, I mean, if you're fatigued, that's where that's the toughest bit. If your legs are starting to cramp, to get them, literally get the pedals round there. So if somebody's got good legs, and mentally as well, once you see someone on that climb, you can see quite a long way ahead.
Yeah.
It's almost a minute long.
Oh, crikey.
From bottom to top. So you can see a minute's worth. And if you've got someone in your sights, that helps, you know.
Yeah, it must help massively, right?
Yeah, yeah. The psychology of it's ridiculous. You know, if you're catching somebody.
Yeah. And why is that then? Is there a danger of you using too much energy trying to catch somebody as well, though?
There's a risk, yeah. But I think, there's a big thing, the psychology of being catching or being caught and what that does to your morale. I mean, all those guys are right on the edge of your whole, half your body saying to race, the other half your body saying, can you just stop and have a sandwich? So actually, you're right on the knife edge between which one to choose.
Yeah. And you talk about stop and have a sandwich. I noticed that Ferran Prevot actually did stop on her last lap in one of the switchbacks. I was thinking, what on earth is she doing? She got problems or anything? But she just took her time, lined up the switchback and got off the bike and went again. I mean, really? That's how much time she actually had in the bag.
Yeah, 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 that you can process things like that.
Yeah. From a British perspective, Annie Last, amazing result.
Great race, yeah. And not off the best second lap. I think she had a flat tyre on the second lap, which put her back a bit.
Right.
So, and then she was coming through. She's one of the fastest racers on the last few laps. So a sixth place is great.
Yeah.
She'll be thinking she probably could have got on the podium.
Yeah. And in the junior women, there was a great result, right?
Junior men.
Junior men.
Yeah.
Women
did well as well.
Yeah.
However, the standout ride was, Charlie Aldridge and junior men.
Because I was going to ask you, where is British cross country at?
Yeah.
And it
hasn't been great.
Right.
There's some good standout riders, but as an overall, there's not the strength in depth that... Mm-hmm. GB Daniels got by a long way.
Yeah.
You know, we get the odd rider come through, you know, you go back. I don't count myself as one of the standout ones. I wasn't a medal winner, but Liam Killeen could win a medal on his day.
Yeah.
Grant Ferguson's come through. He, you know, he's a really strong rider. He had a good ride actually on Sunday, but not as good as he has been. In the women's, Annie, Evie Richards.
Yeah.
She had a good ride. But
Evie Richards. Where's Eva Richards from?
She's Malvern.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so she does a bit, yeah, she's come through and she's had some great results, being a world champ, but had some health issues. So she's had a, for her to come back and finish fourth. Yeah. But yeah, Charlie Aldridge, junior men's cross country world champ.
I've got to ask you this, Ollie, that you were part of the British team. There must have been times where, like, what happens at the Worlds is everyone hangs out, you know, the British team hang out together, the cross-country and the downhill. There must have been occasions where you must have been hanging out with a couple of characters from the downhill scene, right?
A few stories, yeah. But no, the Worlds is, I always preferred being in, I was a mountain biker, we started together with, you know, junior Worlds, or, you know, Worlds when we were talking about in the early days, 93, 94.
Yeah.
Steve Pete, Warner, Will Longdon, all in the same places, all in the same teams. And we didn't consider ourselves a cross-country or downhill, we were just mountain bike.
How does that work? And why was the dynamic work in a situation like that, where you're all brought together for the first time that year, probably, right?
Yeah, it's weird, I think. But I think, actually, there's the differences in what cross-country and downhill go, personality-wise, or from the outside, the persona is they're doing different things.
Yeah.
But in reality, they're not.
Right.
They're all really professional, all working bloody hard, all practicing hard. They're just doing it on different bikes at different times in the day. And actually, the persona is that one will talk about their what they've had for dinner that day, and one will talk about how many beers they're going to have next week.
Yeah.
But actually, during the one up to the race,
yeah,
they're all doing the same stuff.
But there is one thing, though, right? There is one thing that separates cross-country from downhill, or at least in the past, yeah, and that was the skin suits.
Oh,
now, in the past, the British downhillers, or any downhillers for that matter, used to whinge and whine about the skin suits. And at the World Championships, oh, God, we're going to do this. But that's no longer the case, right?
No, they're just getting the sewing machine to their normal kit, right? There's some pretty tight motocross pants, right?
So the men's race, Nino Schurter,
yeah,
unstoppable.
Yeah.
His eighth World Championships, his fifth on the trot, I think.
Mental, absolutely bonkers.
Machine.
Absolutely machine. But if you were going to design a course, we said about the technicality of the course, but if you're going to design a circuit for Nino Schurter, Montserrat,
yeah,
it is right up his street. So it's every climb is, most climbs are technical. They're steep, really technical descents, natural, you've got to nail your line. All the things that he's really strong at, Mont Saint-Anne is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he absolutely nailed it.
Is he actually weak at anything?
No. No, not at all. And yeah. I think if you're going to say he was going to be, I mean, this is really critical, he's 10 out of 10 on everything. If you're going to give him 1.9, mm-hmm, it would be climbs over kind of 5 minutes. But they don't exist anymore.
Right.
You know, they might have existed in 96, but they don't exist anymore.
His precision was pretty startling, actually. He seemed to be hit. His body position and his line, everything seemed to be replicated every single lap.
Yeah, yeah. His technical skill is great. And there's some other guys that are technically good at him, I think, once or twice. But it's just his processing and how he can find new lines, different lines, and then hit that line every time,
right,
is up there with the really good downhillers that I've
seen. So how important is it then? How important is it to hit your lines in a cross-country race like that?
I think Mont-Saint-Anne even more so. So we saw in the women's race quite a lot of flats.
Yeah.
In the men's race, second and third both had to have a flat and come back.
You've got a feel for old Kirchbaumer, right?
Oh, gee, yeah.
I mean, he was second. He wasn't far off.
Go into the woods.
Exactly.
Second,
which is what, like a kilometre from the finish?
Yeah, and comes out walking his bike with an inner tube hanging out. Not an inner tube.
Devastating.
Hanging out, but
devastating.
But that's where Nino was on his line every time, and Mont Saint-Anne will catch you out if you go offline. Same with the downhill,
mm-hmm,
but to a, you know, yeah, more extreme, but if you go offline, you get caught out. Some tracks, you get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
There, it's too rocky, it's too rough,
yeah,
and that's when you burp a tyre.
Well, it showed in, you know, a mate of yours, Laurie Greenland, in the final. Obviously, yep, he was down to the a puncture which he had in the downhill final, but yeah, it's really important. On tyres then, what kind of tyre pressures do you run on a cross-country race like that, with which has got loads of rocks?
I used to run about 22, 23.
22?
23. They're getting less now. I've been quoted 17, 18. Do you think that's low?
Crikey. Well,
high?
Well, I guess it's my weight. I guess I'm 90 kilos. I'm going to be running like 30 PSI.
Yeah, the guys now, I've been just following some tech reports and bits and bobs. You know, the Scott guys with Nino and Kate Courtney are running wider rims, bigger tyres, 17, 18.
When you say wider, what width rims?
30 mil on
30s?
Yeah, on 2.25, 2.3 tyres.
Crikey.
And then running them at like 17, 18 PSI.
The downhillers will be running 30 mil rims.
Yeah, yeah. bigger tyres, so trying to get this lower pressure. And you see something like Mont Saint Anne.
Yeah.
You know, so low tread, so yeah. hardly any tread, but low pressures.
So really what kind of weight tyre then? We're talking like sub-kilo?
Or, oh, 450, 400 grams a tyre. And again, that's where you're saying about the world, just throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah.
You get more punches at the worlds because people run lighter tyres. Right. It's like, so tyres, if you're going to, it's wheels and tyres, isn't it, on a bike, you know, that's yeah. where your rotational mass, blah, blah, blah. So if you're going to take weight off, that's where you do it. And at worlds, everyone goes, do you know what? I've got my light tyres and I've got my super duper light tyres. Mm-hmm. At a World Cup, you're worried about the points, the rankings, the overall. Yeah. At the worlds, you just go, oh, sod it.
450 grams.
Yeah.
Jack, you'll never have ridden a 450 gram tyre in your life, right?
Mental. And that's what they're trying to get round. And that's why when, you know, you hit a rock with one of those,
yeah,
you can rip it or burp it or,
yeah,
yeah, it's pushing it pretty hard.
But yeah, amazing result from Schurter there. Now, I want to ask you a question. Now, what do Christoph Sauser, Marco Fontana, Julian Absalon, Miguel Martinez, Kulhavi have in common?
E-bike racers.
Well, no, actually, four of them are Olympic gold medalists in cross country. Four Olympic gold medalists.
Yeah.
And you're right, though. They're e-bike racers.
Was that the most eclectic mountain bike world championship field you've ever seen in your life? Yeah, I thought that was brilliant. What a mix-up. Yeah, the old boy's coming back.
And I think Jose Hermida would have ridden it, but he didn't want to, because the last time Hermida was at Montserrat, he won a world championship. So
I think he was on the commentary with Rob on.
Yeah, I think next year you'll see him at the world championships. What do you think about the whole business of e-bike racing?
I think at a world's level, it's a bit funny. I think it's e-bikes cool, but brilliant. They enable, we sell them at my bike shop. We've got guys involved, great. I can't quite get my head around having a UCI Worlds. I can't, you know, it's enables people to go riding fun more up things. There's all the benefits of e-mountain bikes.
Yeah.
Having it as a UCI Worlds, I don't know how, can you restrict, you know, de-restricting them? Are you going to start doing kind of doping tests for riders and then engine tests?
Exactly. It's not level, is it?
No, so I think it's a good thing for the industry. I'm sure they're you know, the guys that specialise to win the race will make a massive deal of that. Yeah. They'll love it.
So Alan Hatherley won the race from South Africa, another world champion.
Yeah, and then he's in the race on Sunday, you know, and it's just like, at what point are you now, you know, they'll make it so if you're a current UCI racer, you're not allowed to race it. If you haven't got an Olympic title, are you not allowed to do it?
Right. I don't know. But I personally think that e-bike racing should, like the previous week, I was in, we did a race from Verbier to Courmayeur and Chamonix back to Verbier. It was the Tour of Mont Blanc.
Yeah.
And Christoph Sauser and Marco Fontana were racing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like when you're racing, though, it's more of an endurance. It's almost like Formula One. You've got to work out what mode. You've got to have a strategy for your battery.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's where e-bike racing should go, rather than the short, punchy things where everyone's going to be riding in turbo anyway.
Yeah. But, I think rev and ripping an hour and a half around Mont Saint Anne. I don't know. I think there's probably a better way of doing it than that.
But
I think, it's getting the more guys that are riding. I mean, it's getting guys on mountain bikes.
Exactly.
And if it raises the profile and makes them more acceptable, then.
And I guess, you know, it does inspire other people to come and ride bikes, as you say. Right, downhill.
Yeah.
Downhill. That looked punishing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert on the downhill. I've followed it for a long time. But as a fan, I watched that last night with my head in my hands.
But you are an expert when it comes to training, and obviously you guys train Laura Greenland. You've seen what effort he puts into preparation.
I've seen those guys over the years, you know, when PT won his Worlds,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking about Kitchen Sink, that guy when he won in
2009.
You know, equipment, training, prep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did some stuff with Steve that year.
Oh, did you?
Through journalists. Yeah, we were linked. We did quite a lot of stuff for MBUK that year.
Right.
And we kept bumping in. We did a big thing in Sheffield, actually, with the guys he was training with there.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, he was working. That was 100% that year to get prepped for that one. And yeah, and we see, and I see Laurie every, so my business partner at BW Cycling, Andy Wadsworth,
mm-hmm.
trains Laurie.
Yeah.
So physical training and a bit of the mental side as well. So we see him. I see him a couple of times a week working hard, and you see the transformation over the last few years.
He has. I mean, Laurie used to be a small lad, but now he's like a rugby centre foot, isn't he? Really,
he's
like
a tough bastard. Now. Yeah. He's square, but it's usable.
Yeah,
you know, and you see how hard those guys train and what they have to do. But then when you see Mont Saint Anne, and I see it from a you know, there's a technical side, but I see it, what they're having to do physically, and that's where Andy comes in.
Yeah.
So he can see, well, actually, he knows Matt, he's a good mountain biker in his time, and he knows that what those guys physically have to do. And I know some of the training things they've got on their sleeves and how they approach it, and some of the indoor training sessions they do on the bikes as well.
Yeah.
And the gym stuff, how that's trying to link to that event. It's so physical, mental.
I mean, it does look like one of the most physical tracks on the circuit. I mean, Val d'Isle is pretty physical as well. I mean, you only have to talk to some of the pros and they say, well, I can't actually hold on to the handlebars. It's, you know, you can't see these things, can you?
No. But if you broke down that track, the downhill track, into a physical 4 minutes, to say, for example, okay, we're going to have the downhill track, and then you're going to go, right, this is the bit where you're holding on to the handlebars, this is the bit where you're pedaling, and make that into like a circuit in a gym.
Yeah.
It would be bonkers.
I don't think there'd be many people going to the gym.
But that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what Laurie's doing in the week. They're
really?
Yeah. It's so, like, here's your downhill track, here's what it's like in a gym, right, go for your life.
So when you've got a season of World Cup racing, you've got the World Championships comes, you know, during a hectic schedule, how do the riders manage their intensities? I mean, you can't be at 100% all the time. How does that work?
Yeah, I think for cross country, I think for downhill, I was thinking about this in the week, you know, how I saw Laurie last week before he went, and he just looked so relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, he's going with confidence. So I think downhill is, you've got your physicality, but that the most important thing is the confidence, I think, for those guys.
Yeah.
You know, if they go with confidence because they've had a win or a ride, they're in good shape.
Mm.
So I think it's a mental aspect. Physically, they're probably staying similar most years.
Yeah.
For cross country, it's the physical aspect is obviously bigger.
Mm.
And for those guys trying to manage, Kate Courtney, great start to the year, drifted off. You know, I don't know what's going on, but she's trying to manage that early season form and make it last a year is difficult.
Yeah.
And then you see some people that come through.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about confidence there. Now, and Aaron Gwynn, Mountain Iron was the place where a lot of people have been comebacks. In the women's, we had Miriam Nicole, who'd been out with an injury. Tani Seagrove, who'd been out with an injury. And also Aaron Gwynn. Now, there's a guy who's obviously been struggling early in the year. He was, like, not up to speed at, you know, the first race, and then injuries and stuff like that. But it is a place where there have been some comebacks over the years. Sam Hill came back in 2010 and won the World Championships there. And so it happened in the women's downhill. Miriam Nicole took the win there from Tani Seagrave. But I think it's great to see those guys back on the circuit.
Everyone wants to race against the top guys.
Exactly.
Whatever the discipline or whatever the race, you want that. Everyone wants to see the best guys there. And everyone racing, if you're going to win, you want to win against the best guys. You don't want to see somebody, well, you know, I've had that a couple of times, and, you know, not a world level, but a lower level. Yeah, well done. Yeah. But there's a but, you know, even if it doesn't matter, you can only race who's there.
Yeah.
But there's still a but. You want to beat the best guys.
Yeah, I don't think there's any buts about Miriam Nicole. And it lines things up for the final race, which is in Snowshoe, which is on the east coast of America next week. So massive battle between Tani and Miriam next week for the final World Cup race. But what a track. If it looks tough, like we were talking earlier, if it looks tough on TV, now, the men's race scared the out of me, I have to say.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I was. I had my head in my hand a few times.
It was like, and it got progressively scarier.
Oh, yeah.
As the race went by. Now, Matt Walker from New Zealand was in the hot seat for hours on end, and then there'd been lots of talk during the week. Minar's going to do something special, and he did. He put an immaculate rundown, and that blows my mind. When you see Minar, you see him going down the hill, and it's like, Is there something wrong? Is he actually pushing there? And he doesn't use any.
Yeah, he's crazy smooth.
Unnecessary movement.
There are similarities between him and Nino Shooter in the cross country.
There is, isn't there?
Yeah, they've been doing it for years. They've multiple world champions. Yeah. But they just get it. There's not a line out. They're not ragged at all. You know, they're not going to get the flat tire because everything is on point.
No, they know exactly how to apply themselves. Actually, I was going to talk to you about that. It was about the ages of the women. Seemed to be in the late 20s, whereas the men in the cross country was more in the 30s. Is that like a trend that's happening? Or
I think it's getting, as the racing's got, or cross country, as it's got less, it's got shorter racing, less endurance and more speed and tech focused. I think that suits younger people a bit more.
Right.
So the ages in general have come back a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think they'll keep coming back as it gets faster and faster, I think. Yes. You're getting races now that are under an hour and a half. So
yeah, sorry to move away from downhill there for a second, across country. Let's go back to downhill. Sorry, where were we? We were at Greg Minnaar, who put the run together. And then Laurie.
Yeah.
Your man Laurie Greenland came down. He was green a lot of the way down, and then he went wrong on the step. And everyone thought he made a mistake, but as it transpired, he had a puncture.
Yeah.
I reckon Laurie could have had that race, you know?
Yeah, it was... Yeah, I mean, he was green, and then on that big rock slab where people were, you know, all the, you know, gap jumper thing on it. I've never seen someone go out the screen before.
Exactly.
When someone goes out the screen, and you're like, okay, the guy's gone out the screen.
Yeah.
And he's like, right, how does this work? And then he suddenly popped in again and carried on riding.
Yeah. And, yeah, he got over the line, and he was like only half a second off or something like that. Still close.
Yeah, mental.
And then Pierron came down. Amory Pierron, who's the guy that's been... another one of those guys who's been chucking the kitchen sink at races this year. And he looked fast up the top, really fast. I mean, obviously a bigger guy. He's going to be carrying maybe a little bit more momentum.
Yeah.
70 kilometres an hour through the speed trap. I mean, that's trucking on.
You could see they were just all over the place, weren't they? The bikes are... absolutely insane.
Yeah, I think it's great for the sport to see that. Now, Pierron, he obviously knew he'd made a mistake. And then so too, Danny Hart came down afterwards, and you could see in Danny's eyes, he thought, no, he's not happy with what he's done there. And then Brosnan comes down, and I think Brosnan thought he'd won the race. If you look back, he was 2.5 seconds up. Maybe he celebrated a bit too early, Ollie?
I think he just got beaten, I think, by the better guy. I mean, they both had great runs, didn't they, from what I could see. And
but he obviously got carried away by the emotion of it, and he was like punching his...
I think if you've had a great run like that,
mm-hmm.
and I think that you've finished
smooth,
nailed it.
Yeah, got away.
You'd probably be pretty confident in it.
Walk the tightrope.
Yeah. And you go, actually, I couldn't do a single thing better. You'd probably be a bit excited.
But then to see Loic Bruni go green.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the bike was all over the place. His body was all over the place. It was absolutely... Jack, what have you got to say about it?
Well, it wasn't that ragged, but he was ragged for maybe Bruni.
Yeah, you can tell that... In a sport that is dominated by Fox and RockShox, to see like the Swedish brand Ohlins sort of, you know, get another world championship.
Yeah, you see their mechanics at the end were all obviously pretty pumped, right?
No, they were really pumped. You could see on the TV, they were very, very happy with that. So it looks like things are going to be ratcheted up in the final of the World Cup at Snowshoe on the weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a good race.
Cross country, women's cross country, Yolanda Neff and Kate Courtney battling it out for the win there.
Yeah, they're pretty close together. Mm-hmm. I think they have 70 points or something between them, and they've got, you know, it's 370, I think, you get if you win both. Yeah, so there's still, you know, they've got a big scrap.
Yeah, so Schurter obviously is going to wrap that up.
Yeah, with him and Van der Poel missing, he's racing Road Worlds. So I don't think he's going to suddenly go from Road Worlds to Snowshoe.
No,
I don't know.
It's been good, I mean, Kate Courtney, amazing. Aaron Gwynn came on the scene in around 2012. America has been pretty strong in the last 6 or 7 years, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same in cross-country too?
Less, I mean, cross-country's had a bit of a resurgence lately.
Mm.
So Kate North Courtney obviously leading that, but the Americans had 3 women in the top 20, top 50 on the weekend. So they're looking strong, not just as a nation, but also it starts qualifying Olympic places.
Yeah.
So we're in that process now of qualifying nations and rankings mm-hmm. for that. So they're looking really strong.
Yeah. So in the downhill, Aaron Gwynn had a pretty disappointed, I'd imagine he'd be disappointed with his result. It was 12th on the weekend. But a load of American races there, Charlie Harrison, Dakota Norton. So doing pretty strongly. But it's got to be Bruni, Brosnan, or Pierron at the final, right? Bruni will take some stopping at Snowshoe. It does, yeah. And in the women, like we mentioned earlier, Miriam Nicole and Tani Seagrave. That's going to be an amazing battle. Ollie, thanks for coming in. Nice to get some insight from your previous world championships. Can't believe you did so many of them.
My back's telling me I have. That's for sure.
Great. So, well, hopefully join you next week from Snowshoe in the east coast of America.
Yeah, another good week's racing.
Yeah.